And from the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Alaska State Troopers said a man from Miami has died in Skagway after going for a swim in front of a docked cruise ship. Troopers identified the man as 32-year-old William Anthony Rodriguez. Authorities say an eyewitness saw a man sink into the water near the bow of the Norwegian Jewel cruise ship on Friday afternoon. Multiple agencies began a search. During the search, Skagway City Manager Brad Ryan said the man was presumed drowned. Divers recovered the body on Saturday. Juno's Meals on Wheels program hasn't missed a day of deliveries since the pandemic started, but a lack of staff and volunteers could put the program in jeopardy. When COVID-19 came to Juno, the number of meals the program served nearly doubled. It's now 200 meals each weekday. The meals can be delivered to anyone who is homebound or has mobility issues. But the program is low on volunteers these days and is down to two kitchen staff positions. Matt Walker runs the program. He says volunteers have picked up extra shifts, but he's worried they'll burn out.
They've just taken, you know, time out of their own schedules and said, the need is greater than my free time.
Running these meal delivery routes does more for Juno's seniors than just dropping off food. It's also a wellness check, and it's a moment of social interaction each day for those who don't always get it. Walker says that the rising cost of gas may be scaring some potential volunteers from the job. It requires a lot of driving. But that might not be the whole story. The program has struggled to fill volunteer positions since the start of the pandemic. Walter thinks that might be because not enough people know about the program.
It's one of those things that sometimes, unless you're using it or you know someone that uses it, you don't realize that it's happening behind the scenes. And I think that that's one of the things that's happening here.
He's worried that this current lack of volunteers will jeopardize their two-year streak of never missing a delivery. This June marks the 40th anniversary of Celebration, biennial four-day event based in Juneau, celebrating Tlingit, Haida, and Simian culture. In preparation for this year's festivities, young tribal citizens in Sitka took part in an afternoon regalia workshop, crafting their own robes, vests, and headbands. KCAW's Tash Kimmel reports.
Okay, so these need to be iron, and then you pick your felt.
It's a sunny Saturday morning in Sitka, a coveted occurrence in the otherwise rainy Southeast community. In the basement of Blatchley Middle School, a small group of Sitka students is busy measuring, cutting, and sewing. For these kids, today is about honoring their culture through the age-old tradition of regalia making, even if that means missing out on the sunshine.
We're not making you work away on a Saturday. We're here celebrating our culture, and we're very excited to help you guys and teach you how to do that.
That's Claire Hill. She's one of a handful of parents and cultural educators who put together the workshop in preparation for Juno's upcoming celebration.
The different types of regalia we're going to be focusing on today will have vests. Those are usually used not really for dancing so much or performing, but they're used really as an expression of who you are. And robes are really used mostly for performances, and it's a reflection more of who your family is. A little bit of who you are as an individual, but you're representing your family, and that's going to be visually expressed on your robe.
While attendees will walk away with their own vest, robe, or headband, Hill says the workshop is about more than just the tangible pieces of regalia.
The person that's wearing the regalia is really for them to showcase who they are, the family they come from, the people that they are from. Regalia is something that we must respect. It's a part of our history. It has symbols of our different clans. So it's something that's very honored and it's very respected.
As someone who came to regalia making later in life, Hill has made a point to include it in the upbringing of her own child.
I want it to just be what he knows. It's his normal. To be very proud to wear his regalia. And I think that's really important as far as establishing self-confidence. It's very important for me and a lot of other parents that I talk to.
Kids mill around the classroom, eagerly taking measurements, cutting fabric, and picking out the form line drawings they'll use in their creations. For middle schooler Jason Miller, this was his first time making a robe.
I'm Yanyedi. My Tlingit name is Geshua. I'm going to have a red wolf design and then a red border. The main color is going to be blue.
Do you want to show her your design?
Yeah, my design's over there. No. Gonna be a wall.
Oh wow! Did you make that?
No, I just found it over there.
The group will meet once more to finish their pieces, and later this summer, they'll proudly display them at Celebration, where, with any luck, the sun will be shining. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Tosh Kimmel.
The status of the Mount Edgecombe volcano near Sitka has changed from dormant to historically active. The Alaska Volcano Observatory updated Edgecombe status on May 9th, but it doesn't mean that the charter is any closer to an eruption, if at all. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
A lot of people in Sitka have become used to calling Mount Edgecombe dormant, but that term really isn't used by geologists.
It's a word that isn't very well defined in volcanology. It doesn't have a lot of specific meaning to us, and instead we tend to talk about volcanoes with how recent or long ago it's been since they were active or since they had an eruption.
Cheryl Cameron is a geologist with the Alaska Volcano Observatory in Fairbanks. Mount Edgecombe was formerly known as a Holocene volcano, since the geologic evidence of its last major eruption dates from the Holocene era, around 12,000 years ago. The AVO now classifies Mount Edgecombe as historically active.
And for this term of active, this flavor of active, we don't require that a volcano has had an eruption. So volcanoes can get put into this category through having had a recent eruption or a suspected recent eruption, or they've got a period of deformation or seismic activity or fumarolic activity that we think reflects accumulation of magma in the crust below the volcano.
A recent eruption usually means within the last 300 years, but the AVO recognizes that native oral histories indicate an eruption history that goes a few hundred years beyond that. Nevertheless, being classified as historically active doesn't mean that Mount Edgecombe is about to erupt. Rather, it's going to get more attention now from the Alaska Volcano Observatory. Cameron says a geophysical team is on the ground in Sitka to do a temporary seismic installation on Kruzoff Island that includes a global positioning system. The GPS can provide data in real time about any deformation of the crust that might be happening, rather than waiting for a satellite to pass overhead, which happens only once every 12 days. Not that the AVO wasn't paying attention before, but there are over 50 historically active volcanoes in Alaska. Cameron actually grew up in Sitka, and the seismic swarm in April that got this ball rolling may have gone unnoticed, but it didn't.
Because my brother sent me the earthquake location, and he said, "Cheryl, what's up with this?" And I said, "Well, gosh, let me ask the seismologist." And I asked the seismologist, and the seismologist said, "You know, there's a swarm." And, of course, we still needed to do more work and further analysis to determine if the earthquakes were, you know, some sort of rather mundane tectonic processes or if they're related to the volcano.
Cameron says that the Alaska Volcano Observatory is making plans for a permanent seismic installation on Mount Edgecombe and that any volcanic activity would likely come with plenty of advance warning. "We don't want people losing sleep over it," she said. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Governor Mike Dunleavy has announced his running mate, Alaska Department of Corrections Commissioner Nancy Dahlstrom. Dunleavy says Dahlstrom's executive and legislative experience makes her well-suited to take over the state's top job at a moment's notice, if she had to. Dahlstrom announced her resignation as the head of the Corrections Department Monday afternoon, minutes before the campaign announcement came. If Alaska voters re-elect Dunleavy in November, Dahlstrom would become lieutenant governor and the head of the Division of Elections. The current lieutenant governor, Kevin Meyer, announced in December that he would not seek another term. The contest, like all state elections now, will be an open primary, followed by ranked choice voting in the general. The candidates for governor and lieutenant governor run as a team in the August primary, and the top four teams advance to the November ballot. And as for the weather, it's currently 49 degrees and raining. More showers are likely tonight and tomorrow. Wednesday and the rest of the week might be drier. For more local news, visit us at ktoo.org. I'm Yvonne Crumery.